Welcome to the Poem of the Week. Each week, our poems are intended to help you practice the best, most current medicine by alerting you to studies that could change your practice. As usual, our host this week is National Public Radio's Dr. Michael Wilkes and Essential Evidence Senior Editor Dr. Mark A. Bell. Gentlemen.
Thanks, Maggie. Hey, Mark, how are you?
I'm good. Good to talk to you.
Yes, it has been a crazy week, but these weeks are all crazy. We are going to talk about something we've talked a lot about, hypertension. It is a huge problem in the United States and worldwide. They say it's the most common reason for office visits among pregnant women and men in the United States, and the number one reason for prescription drugs. So it's really important that we get this right. About half of hypertensive people have never been identified and are not controlled. So blood pressure, our listeners will remember, is a complicated physical equation that has to do with cardiac output and systemic vascular resistance and length and yada, yada, yada. It is important that we control one of those variables. Lots of risk factors. There is this thing that we're still calling essential hypertension. It really is better termed unknown hypertension because we really don't understand it. We think that it's a result of genetic and perhaps environmental factors and compounding factors that affect both cardiovascular and renal structure and function. We know that there are some risk factors: age, obesity, family history, race, reduced nephron number, in other words, kidney disease, high sodium seems to have an effect, alcohol, physical inactivity. Anyways, lots of things. The American College of Cardiology and the AHA came out with guidelines. Mark, you found a poem published toward the end of 2017. It asks the questions, what changes to hypertension management are now being proposed by the new guidelines? That's from the American College of Cardiology and the American Heart Association. Mark, lots of text, lots of stuff to plow through. What are the essential take-home messages that have changed?
Yeah, this was the, thanks, Mike. This was the longest poem I've ever written. It was about two or three times as long as the typical one. And that's because this was a very detailed guideline with a lot of recommendations. The backstory is that the previous set of guidelines had been written by, came from the NHLBI and were written by a group of primary care physicians and cardiologists. And they actually didn't completely agree. And the primary care docs on that committee prevailed to some extent and came up with a guideline endorsing a target of 140 over 90 for most adults and even a slightly relaxed 150 over 90 for older patients. And that was endorsed by the AFP and the ACP. The cardiologists actually at that time issued a minority report saying, we disagree, we think it should be a lower target. And then when NHLBI shipped the guidelines over to the American College of Cardiology and said, here, you guys take over, now it's all cardiologists or almost all cardiologists on this guideline panel. And so they revised the guideline quite a bit. It's largely based on the results of the SPRINT trial. The chair of the guideline panel and many of the members of the panel were investigators in that SPRINT trial. And the SPRINT trial, to refresh everybody's memory, found that in non-diabetic high-risk patients, average 10-year risk of a cardiovascular event of 15%, which is high. And again, non-diabetic but high risk, in that subgroup of patients, a target of 120 over 80 instead of 140 over 90 did decrease mortality over a, you know, I think it was a 3.5-year period of the study by around 1.5%. It also increased some things like falls, like acute kidney injury, like hypotensive episodes and things like that, and led to patients having to take on average one more drug. So there were some good, some bad for this subset. What this guideline has done has essentially, to some extent, broadened the interpretation of that study, which was, again, in a pretty specific high-risk non-diabetic group, to everyone, to more or less everyone. And so now they recommend a target blood pressure of 130 over 80 for everyone, with drug therapy recommended for patients with known heart disease or vascular disease, diabetes, chronic kidney disease, or anyone that has at least a 10-year risk of 10% or higher. And that's kind of, that's a similar risk that would get someone on a statin as well. It's based on the pooled cohort equations, which have their own issues in terms of probably overestimating risk in a contemporary population of patients. So that's kind of one problem, is your risk equation is probably too pessimistic and will end up leading to some overtreatment. Another issue is the SPRINT trial didn't have any diabetic patients, yet they're saying this target is for anybody with diabetes. The HOPE-3 trial, which enrolled diabetics and tried to see if a lower blood pressure target worked, didn't find a significant benefit in that group. So, you know, there's a lot going on here. The trial also measured, the SPRINT trial also measured blood pressure differently than most of us do in our practice. Patients had to sit alone in a quiet room for 5 minutes. Then, only then did they do 3 automated blood pressure measurements and use the final reading, not the average, but the final one. I'm sorry, the average of the 3 was the final blood pressure. So it ended up with, if you measure blood pressure that way, it's usually about 10 millimeters or more lower than just that first walk in the door blood pressure. And so, again, will lead to different measurement of blood pressure, confusing us about whether this target is really beneficial or not. So, you know, a lot going on. There was a clear bias, I would say, toward avoiding undertreatment rather than avoiding some of the potential harms of overtreatment. Guideline also, so in addition to this change of a lower target for most, most adults or many adults, particularly if you look at population over 50, it's hard to find someone that doesn't meet, you know, these criteria. They recommend using chlorthalidone over hydrochlorothiazide. And that's mainly because it was the drug used in some of the trials. Yeah, it's like, we all use the U.S., it's predominantly hydrochlorothiazide. They also say use a higher dose. Don't use 12.5 milligrams of hydrochlorothiazide. Use at least 25 and up to 50 if you use hydrochlorothiazide. If you use chlorthalidone, 12.5 to 25, not the 6.25 dose. So we have a lot of patients who are on, for example, lisinopril 10 and hydrochlorothiazide 12.5. They're saying that's an inadequate dose based on the previous clinical trials. I'm not totally sure I buy that, but that's what they're saying. The trouble with that is if you go with those higher doses and or chlorthalidone, you also increase the risk of hypokalemia. So we're going to have to be more, if we buy into this, we're going to have to be more vigilant about monitoring our patients' potassium levels. Finally, they also endorse what the USPSTF said was, make sure we measure out-of-office blood pressures, and I would say that that should probably, the out-of-office blood pressures are probably a better target rather than that first in-office blood pressure. I think we've discussed that before. So a lot going on here. I think it's going to take a little unpacking and a little time to sort through this. These guidelines were published late in 2017, and the poem came out about a month or two ago, and we're talking about it now. It's still kind of a work in progress. It has not been endorsed by the American College of Physicians. It has not been endorsed by the AAFP, and there's a reason for that, and that is some of these issues that I've talked about and the fact that essentially no primary care physicians were at the table when these guidelines were developed.
Right. So lots of stuff. We could talk about this for quite a while. I've got two important questions. One is we've seen this before. You and I have talked about this before over the years, particularly with diabetes, this concept that lower hemoglobin A1C, lower levels are better levels. And, you know, we've talked about this U curve, and I think things are now moving back to recommendations for a more moderate goalpost for us to shoot toward. I guess my question is, why do cardiologists and primary care doctors have a different world vision? Why aren't we looking at the same data and understanding it the same way?
Well, you know, that's a good question. I think certainly it's not monolithic. There are preventive cardiologists that have spoken up with concern about these guidelines. There are, I think there may be a different spectrum of patients that are being cared for, with a, you know, us seeing more patients that have multimorbidity, and it's us being primary care. You know, we have to think about not only that my patient is now taking three antihypertensives instead of two, and they're taking a higher dose, and we're having to worry about their potassium, but that's in the context of the fact that we're also treating their COPD and their type 2 diabetes and their depression. And maybe looking at the bigger picture, this tiny additional reduction in mortality risk for a subset of very high-risk patients, there clearly is a bias toward action rather than don't just do something, stand there, which is sometimes an important thing to do as a primary care physician.
Absolutely. Well, thanks. I mean, this is a great lesson. We'll have to see how this plays out. You know, listeners will have to decide how aggressive they want to be with their patients. There's certainly lots of food for fodder here. Thanks, Mark, for bringing that to our attention. We'll talk again next week.
Yes, we will. And just for listeners, be looking out in the American Family Physician Journal. We're going to have a point counterpoint about this guideline. And I'm sure there'll be a lot more in the next published in the next year or two discussing it. So talk to you next week.
Okay. Thanks, Mark.
That's this week's poem. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to look at this and other recent poems, please go to www.infopoems.com. Please join us again next week for another medical poem.